you have a quorum, so we'll go ahead and draw the match policy of meeting to order. Approval of meeting agenda and minutes.
The CAC objects to the agenda discussing items that we didn't, weren't able to review. Those items are the project status report and the TIP amendment to Sardis Church.
Yeah, those were emailed to all the CAC members. Both of those.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, we had the day before the CAC meeting, came over this afternoon, couldn't get into this computer concerning the TIP amendment, and we had not received the status report. The TIP amendment, it was basically more or less a courtesy, submitting it to the CAC for them to review. It really comes under administrative changes to the TIP since it's small and insignificant. So that's basically where we stay from there.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to approve the meeting agenda minutes.
Second. Move second that the minutes and agenda be approved. Any other questions? All in favor, let me know.
Aye.
No. Okay, motion is carried. And the agenda is approved. Okay, election of officers.
This is the annual election of officers, and normally it's either the mayor of the city of Macon or the chairman of the board of commissioners, and there is no hard and fast rule that it rotates back and forth. There have been times when it's been the mayor several years. There's also been times when it's been the chairman of the board of commissioners for several years in a row. So, there's nothing in the bylaws that says it has to be the one, but that's the way it's normally been done.
But anyway, what's that?
I make a motion that we re-elect the chairman Sam Hall as the chairman of the
Sure. any additional? All in favor, let me know.
Aye.
Voted. Motion carried.
We need to elect the vice chair.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to vote that Mayor Ricketts be elected the vice chair.
Second. Any questions? All in favor, let me know that.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
I don't like the room.
That's our officers. That's taken care of.
Okay. Committee reports.
The CAC met on Wednesday, January 11th. We had our election of officers. I was re-elected chairman, and Dr. Stella Tsai was elected as vice chairman. Don presented an overview on the MPO, which I think on our agenda. We could not review the draft amendment on Sardis Church Road, as Lindsay mentioned, because of availability of the product, nor could we review the MTA proposed maintenance facility. If that was an action item, we recommended that the policy committee postpone until we had the opportunity to review. As far as getting things by email, if it's clarification of an item that we've had public discussion of, we do that, but if it's an item that's never had public discussion, it seems inappropriate since we are a public body not to have discussion. We had extensive discussion on the noise impact along the I-16, I-75 corridor. Mrs. Peg Jones and Agnes Donaldson, who I believe are both going to comment today under citizen comments, were present. Ms. Jones talked about the efficacy of the barriers that have gone up in her neighborhood. She's about a quarter, half mile off the freeway. But there's been a noticeable reduction in noise at her house to the point they can now open windows without it being annoying. Mrs. Donaldson is in Huguenin Heights and stressed the need for barriers in her area, but I'll let them speak for themselves. We passed three motions. The first is that the policy committee requests GDOT to study all areas adjoining I-75 and I-16 within the Macon city limits, including those outside the immediate project area, to determine whether sound barriers are warranted under federal requirements for the health and safety of Macon residents. Secondly, we move that the policy committee requests GDOT to expedite scheduling of the promised public meeting regarding sound barriers. They have indicated they will have a meeting. We think the sooner the better. And third, that the policy committee requests that GDOT address all existing strategies for improving the aesthetics of current and future sound barriers, including the use of low-maintenance landscaping to screen those barriers. Since we brought this up before, and it's been of major concern to both citizens and members of the CAC, I thought I'd try to give you a little background. So that you're aware of some of the concerns that have come up at the CAC. And I think our motion divides it up sort of the way our discussion has gone. We see a need to protect the safety and welfare of citizens affected by adverse impacts from the freeway. And one of our members, Mr. Ryan, has actually borrowed a sound meter and tested and has been able to demonstrate the efficacy of the barriers that have gone up. His readings came out very close to what GDOT's were, which was reassuring. So the barriers are effective. There's a lot of misinformation or lack of information on the efficacy of sound barriers, the options with sound barriers among citizens in the community. And with big projects like we have, we think those should be addressed. GDOT's planning to have a hearing. We'd like to expedite that so we could address the technical and planning aspects of those barriers. One thing, the current barriers are effective, but they're not attractive. They're very ugly when you get so many of them. And we're talking about perhaps having barriers on overpasses. If you use that type of a barrier, it would look like a cattle chute. You know, it is not attractive, and it doesn't do Macon justice. Macon's a beautiful city, and we're trying to, you know, expand our tourist industry. We're trying to do economic development. The city's trying to revitalize existing neighborhoods, and having the freeway integrate to the neighborhood in a way that minimizes both the physical and the aesthetic effects is critical to the long-term success of Macon. So I think the letter will give you a little bit more detail, but there's been a lot of arguments both ways in our committee because we see the need for protecting safety, but we don't think they have to be ugly, and we think Macon deserves having aesthetic treatment that does justice to a historic and beautiful city. Did everybody get one of these? Okay. Other action that we took, we didn't hear the project status from the transportation Department of Transportation. We did have a follow-up on a citizen complaint about a pedestrian path from Magnolia Drive to King Death, Danforth. One of our members, Mr. Petrak, went and took photos, and it's become a dumping ground. It's very unsightly and hazardous for students. But I believe the planning department's getting together with Public Works and they're addressing that issue, which we appreciate. Another item was lack of synchronization of traffic lights on Riverside Drive. Again, Mr. Petrak talked to Kimberly Larson at DDOT, and she assured him that those will be synchronized in the future. The last motion we passed was that Forest Hill Road be moved out to 10 years, again, to give more time for review of the plans. And I would move in the appropriate place the agenda that the committee consider that. On a personal note, I'd like to congratulate the mayor for getting Second Avenue approved to be a Sustainable City Design Academy project by the American Architectural Foundation. I'll be very interested to hear how he explains the inconsistency of using modern design concepts on a pet project, one which I support, and either ignoring them or opposing them in residential neighborhoods. That's my report.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, thank you.
The TCC's report is basically dealing with each of the agenda items, and we will discuss that as each item comes up.
Okay.
Okay,
this is the sample public input, 5 minutes per person. I know you're not paying for one, but there's some others, I guess, too. So why don't we pull your stocking? You got a presentation to start.
Yes. Good morning. My name is Peg Jones, and I want to thank DOT for putting up the petitions. People have said they're ungodly looking, but I live near the river, which is, I think Mr. Fisher said, about a mile fourth away by the railroad track. And last summer, I can sleep on the second floor of my home, and I can open my windows, and it sounded like Niagara Falls, just roaring. And I went and put my chin on the windowsill and said, oh, Lord, we're in trouble. And then I had to be away this fall. My sister broke her ankle, so I was away for 12 weeks and came home, and it's totally different. The barriers have gone up. What y'all had done was cut the trees down. That's when the noise started. I did notice that my walls were beginning to crack because I had my living room painted about 3 years ago. And that's another effect that the noise barriers hopefully will take away. So I want to thank y'all for doing it for me. And I have to speak out of concern for those who are closer in other areas, because I know it would probably, I'm sure, affect their health and the value of their homes if they start cracking. But it definitely has been a benefit to me, and I just want to say thank you. And I think things can be worked out with landscaping or ways to do it. I know Greensboro has gorgeous crepe myrtles, and Macon's a beautiful city. I saw I-75 built. The John Deere tractors came down moving all that dirt, early 60s, late 60s. And then the UDCs came in and planted the rose bushes for Memorial Day. So now they're all gone. The cherry blossoms are all gone. But we can redo it and make it as attractive as it was. But I just want to say thank you for putting up the barriers, because they have had a great benefit.
Thank you.
I think
Ryan, I'll move on right.
I was here, and I think you saw, and I was one of those interested people, because I am in the zone and one of the few people who has moved back to Macon and trying to revitalize my neighborhood. Now, contrary to what a lot of people are saying who do not live in the area, the barriers won't help. They will. They will in some way help, because I have known personally two or three people who would have bought some of those older houses that are closer to the expressway, but they could not put up with the noise. So a major point here is to bring Nathan back. And as you said in your report, that Macon is a major architectural city on the hill. Everybody who will know that if you come into those little areas, you're going to find some little gems for houses, but you're not going to have productive people to come in and take those houses over. You've got too many absentee landlords who do not really appreciate the architecture and in the area. They're just wanting a fast buck. We've got to make it amenable for anybody who comes into Macon to look in that area. Now, the real estate people don't even consider that area. I've had people who live, I've known from Macon, up in Atlanta, because I've lived in Atlanta, who are saying that that little area is like Inland Park. It's like Little Five Corners. It is Decatur. And you do have that, really, essentially, that possibility. But one of the first things you've got to do is produce amenities to make people come back in. And they are not going to buy where there's all this noise. Now, some people said, oh, well, it will look bad. I don't want you to make us a stepchild, DOT. They can get stuff in Atlanta, we can get it here. And I have seen the noise barriers through Buckhead. And you don't get much richer than Buckhead. And the people haven't moved out. They moved back in. So as one of those people who lives in the area, and I'm one of few, I want to bring back the area as much as I possibly can, because I was raised in that area. And it has great possibilities. So we got to go with step one, step two, step three to make it really essentially attractive to people who want to come back in to make it, or newcomers come back in to make it. And the first step is get rid of all of that excessive noise.
Thank you.
All right, Michael Ryan, I'm speaking on behalf of the CAC, of which I'm a member, and for myself. There's a document included in the handout that y'all got, and it's a summary of my own analysis of the noise along I-75 corridor. As I stated, I've gone to numerous locations, both locations that are already slated for noise barriers, places where noise barriers exist, and areas south of Hartman Avenue where no noise barriers exist, nor are they planned. And throughout the corridor, you have noise impacts as defined by the federal regulations, 67 decibels exterior noise level. I've been in half a dozen homes. Every one of those homes, these are homes that are close to the interstate, every one of those homes had a noise level exceeding the threshold for abatement. Every one of them. One guy had a noise level in his bedroom of over 60 decibels. There was another gentleman who was going to come here today, but I got a call from him just before I came down here. Mr. Banta, who lives out on Lakeview Drive, which is down near Rocky Creek Road, just at the interchange there. He was going to come and express his concern about the noise and request the barriers. He told me that he often can't sleep at night because the noise is so loud. That's all the way down to Rocky Creek Road. So the impacts throughout the corridor exist. The question is, will anything be done about it? And I guess really, will funding be made available for it? I'd like to actually review some background to this, because since I've followed this issue for years and I've been coming to these Manchester Policy Committee meetings since the mid-80s, in 1998 and 1999, Mayor Marshall at Policy Committee meetings requested, spoke about noise barriers and the need for noise barriers along 75 and 475. And I think there was an issue raised then by GDOT about whether the barriers could be put up when a widening or a new road project was not being planned, and Marshall requested some clarification of that and said he would consult with the Federal Highway about that, but nothing happened. Also, at one of those meetings in, I think, 98 or 99, there were some residents of Huguenin Heights at this meeting. Ms. Davis and her husband, Randall, who lived not far from Ms. Donaldson, and they expressed their concern about the noise and the impact, and of course nothing's happened, and those people actually left Macon. They abandoned that home and left Macon. In 2002, GDOT agreed to put up noise barriers after they had already widened 475 to three lanes in each direction. That's after that widening had already taken place. GDOT then agreed to put up the noise barriers that you find out there along across from Macon State College and along Lake Wildwood right now. So, going along, coming up closer to our date, 2005, the Mets Policy Committee under Chairman Bishop sent a letter to GDOT requesting a review of the feasibility and the policy of GDOT regarding barriers along 75 south of the 16 interchange, that is, be south of Hardeman Avenue for Side Street. Nothing happened. The next year, 2006, again at a policy committee meeting, Vernon Ryle requested that a congressional earmark for noise barrier along 75 be pursued. He stated that the local government should not be responsible for the funding of noise barriers. And I deal with that issue in the handout that you have there, because essentially that's a federal facility. The federal government has actually created a nuisance for this community, and they're responsible for correcting the nuisance and the costs associated with it. But back to what Mr. Ryle said in 2006, he said that if federal funding were available, then GDOT could come up with appropriate matching funds, you know, if the local government would have to do that. GDOT's Tom Queen stated that noise barriers were constructed in Columbus under similar funding methods. So that's the background to this. I will say this. In my attendance at these meetings and my observations of the projects that y'all have approved and pushed through over the years, I've seen millions of dollars spent to relocate and realign roads to facilitate real estate development or redevelopment. For example, Stadium Drive got relocated at more than $1 million to facilitate some redevelopment there. Linden Avenue at Montpelier, the same. Winship Street at Linden Avenue and Johnson Avenue, the same. Bowman Road got relocated to facilitate the development. So y'all find the money to help those who have influence. Ms. Donaldson, Ms. Jones, and myself, and many others, if you care to go out and ask in these areas where none of you live, they would like some money for their area of town to address a threat to public health. And I will emphasize that the area impacted is primarily populated by African Americans. Therefore, it is an environmental justice zone, and this becomes an environmental justice issue. So, you can find the money if you got the will to do it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I'm just curious, you know, and I appreciate the history, but, you know, you could, if you want to speak to STAR, the United American History Month, much of the interstate system could be characterized as an environmental justice issue, particularly when you consider what happens with the Pleasant Field neighborhood. But I do appreciate the history, because I've seen you thinking and wondering in my own mind, what was it that was going on with these neighborhoods before this lady's land and apparently nothing. But I think the lady who spoke earlier indicated that there were trees and that sort of mitigated the effect. Is that basically why this is now just bugging back up again?
No.
Okay.
Well, I might say that the trees have been cut and they continue to cut them at the section where Lawton Avenue has been stopped. And And the explanation from DOT was that they didn't want to obscure a sign that was down the road. Well, they could put the sign up higher. I think that the trees would have helped to beautify a little bit the area and would help with the noise. I cannot imagine that they wouldn't have some.
There's a marked difference between the trees and all.
Well, they keep cutting that area, and I don't know why. And the one also at where Oglethorpe becomes Danbury, and comes in. All of that area is cut continually.
I'm Jaime Webb. I'm on the CAC, a resident of Charlotte Hills. When the interstate was put through in the 60s, this is not totally comprehensive, but it gets most of them. The following neighborhoods were impacted directly. Hickory Ridge, Pine Forest, Riverview, Riverdale, Riverside Park, Kings Forest, Woodland Hills, Northwoods, Winship Gardens, Shirley Hills, North Highlands, Fort Hill on the other side of the river, Intown, Wimbish, Oglethorpe Homes, Huguenin Heights, Tatnall Heights, Anthony Hills, Felton Homes, Lincoln Heights, Winslow Terrace, Grantwood, Pinona Hills, and Pendleton Homes. There may be two or three more that I missed. How many members of either the policy committee or the technical committee live in any of those neighborhoods? How many members of the CAC live in any of those neighborhoods? How many people in this room live in any of those neighborhoods? There was little, to answer your question, interest in those particular neighborhoods when the interstate was put through. And then when they added 16 to it, it really impacted it even more. We are about to face multiple levels of devastation in this community when they enlarge that interchange, which is, in my opinion, unnecessary. They say it's for traffic safety. The article in the paper this week that said it showed where there were fatalities on in our community, there was not one in that sector. There was one fatality in 2010 that was a inebriated bike driver at 2 in the morning who ran in the back of a pickup truck. There has not been a fatality in the interchange area for probably 4 or 5 years. It's not a high fatality area, period. Also, they say that the reason they're going to have to do the flyover bridges, which are going to add to the noise barrier and problem, is because there's a left-hand exit. There's not a left-hand exit. The interstate goes straight to Savannah. It bears off to the right to go south. Coming the other way, it does exactly the same thing. It's not a left-hand exit. Federal Highway should not count that as a left-hand exit. We're being bamboozled in this community into accepting something that is designed by people who don't live in this community. They don't care about this community and what all of this does to it. There was no interest in what the interstate did to those neighborhoods in the heart of Macon when it was built. As it is designed right now, there's no interest whatsoever in what it does to it now. The impact of the noise and the pollution and the air and what it does to the ambience and the livability of the heart of Macon is incalculable. I sell real estate. I sell real estate in that area. I know what people want. But more importantly, several years ago, the MPO spent untold hours and money and energy coming up with a plan that is called Vision 2020. Is that right? Is that what it's called?
I don't remember exactly the name.
Well, anyway, it was a vision preference study. It should be the Bible for not only this organization, but for the technical committee, as well as the CAC, as well as planning and zoning, and the county commission, and our city council. That is what the people of this community want our community to look like. It is not auto-centric. It is not highway-centric. It has trees. It goes very much along the lines of what the mayor is trying to do on 2nd Street. That's what the people in this community want our community to be. They don't want it to be ugly. The sound barriers that they are putting up, the deforestation that they have done, is pure, criminally ugly. And Macon doesn't deserve ugly. I am personally not supportive of the sound barriers as they are. I think there must be better alternatives. I also believe that there are better alternatives from progressive road people that will help us better than the sound barriers, like rubberized surfaces and all kinds of things. The CAC has asked you all to please implement a public meeting, a public forum with some noise experts to bring in, talk to the people, talk to the population, and give us the alternative and tell us how effective things will be. That's what we need. That's what we want. We don't want brown, ugly sound barriers that look like they belong in a desert. So it's up to this committee to put a stop to it. It's being designed by people who don't live here, who don't care about it. It's as if I were designing something in Tuscaloosa. I have no interest in it. Nobody. And that's what we want out of you.
Get one to, gee, I think there's two. There we go. Pass one to the mayor. And then these also. Take one and pass that.
Supersize is because the same company that gave you bizarre projections for Forest Hill Road and Houston Road is giving you, again, a fake projection. Now, I tell you, it's hard to wake this thing back up when it's going to sleep, but y'all saw that it was a road meeting. This video is available to you. The road meeting is 2001, the very first and only true public meeting about Forest Hill Road. We had stakeholder meetings later on. There was only one meeting that met the federal guidelines for a public meeting. That was 2001, June 11th. And what I want y'all to understand is there's been misinformation coming from the technical committee, because I've heard numerous people here say that over the past, since 2001, that the systems have been accommodated, and it's a small project. Well, this is, on this side, these are the pictures from the video. So this is the same piece of paper, and you can see frame capture from the video. The first section is also red and widening from
north side to Windish. And on the other side, I've got it legible, but it's certainly legible than video. So one little note here, 2001 plan has 40 plus 4, 8 feet, 44 feet. Okay, since 2001, if the citizens should have been accommodated, we'd expect there to be less pavement. But right now, the plan is for 50 feet of pavement. So it's gone from 44 to 50 feet in the past 10 years. With all the input we've given them, here are the official comments from 2001. Here are the tip comments from 2011. The 700 comments I don't have printed out. You can see we have not been accommodated. In fact, we've been bamboozled. And just as Simon was saying, the people who designed this don't live in this community. They live in Atlanta, and they're in it to make money. That's why it makes sense to supersize it. They have convinced some of y'all in the city and all the counties that over the past 10 years they have listened to the public and that they have accommodated us and downsized it. Clearly, they have not. And I will ask technical to confirm that it was 44 in 2001 and it's 50 now.
Well, I can't do that right at this moment.
Mr. Sheets oversees. Maybe you can confirm.
I can't run that one. I already know what you got. Oh, I'll copy of
it.
We've got a sidewalk on both sides. Instead of one side, we had in 2001. See that?
So they've added a sidewalk and they widened it to 5 feet each sidewalk. And in the SPLOST, this 2001 public meeting accurately reflected the SPLOST said it's going to be 3 lanes with 1 4-foot sidewalk. So this is what the people voted on.
The language have changed and neither is the light bulb. So.
True. This still 40 feet of travel space, whereas right now it's 22 feet, existing another 22 feet.
And it's grossly undesigned.
I think we've established that there's safer designs. And I think we've established that the traffic counts are fictitious. You believe that GDOT, can y'all confirm? We don't know about traffic projections. We have guidelines for projections. And for projections, you're supposed to heavily weigh the most recent 5-year traffic trend. And it says preferably you go out 10 years.
Traffic counts you're talking about, you got in the bulk. I'll call those average annual daily traffic, kind of planning level. And when you get to a design point, it's a little bit apples and oranges. Precision needed to design traffic is different from the ones that are planning level, kind of general trends. Because when you go to design, you're much more precise. And you can take into account future trends.
Okay.
And location of the sidewalks, so I can tell you. That if they're not really comparable, apples to apples.
What have you got some kind of, I guess, questions that you want to give to the various folks? If you sort of outline those, we can make sure they appear and I answer that in your next meeting. Because seemingly some stuff will require some review on that part. So if you got those questions, or you can rest your presentation, make sure we get those down and you can respond to them. That's what's up with me.
Okay, well, I think that in terms of the county commissioners meeting, because you indicated last meeting that we had been accommodated. And I said, Mr. Chairman, that's not true. We have not, the plan has grown, it's not downsized. At that point, somebody in the audience said that I was a liar.
But let's not revisit those.
Yeah.
I just want to get that relation. But as it relates to this, why don't you again ask your appropriate question? And we'll not hear the answer in the subsequent meeting. So if you got some, let's want to spend the next 2 or 3 minutes asking those, putting those down. Elaborate if you like.
Yeah, I think this is, I'll rest my case. I think this is key.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's get to the agenda items.
Okay, I'm going to discuss the MPO boundary area. At the last meeting, the mayor was looking at the existing MPO boundary in the Unified Work Program and asked, what would be the possibilities of perhaps expanding the area and maybe taking a look at that. You would have to go through and do a memorandum of understanding that any adjacent communities that would be interested in doing that. So you'd have to do that all over again. And right now, Georgia DOT, the rural planning section, basically takes care of Monroe County, the non-mass area of Jones County and such. And we would still have the same population in the urbanized area as defined by the census, so there would not be any additional funding. So you'd have to get buy-in from the communities who've not even been contacted or anything. And the dollar amount would be the same to do the same amount of planning that we do for Macon-Bibb County and the southern through the Jones County. So that's something that's where that basically stands. It could be done. It really hasn't been done in very many places, going out into the rural areas very far beyond the urbanized area itself.
Any questions on that?
Is there any more information about the possibility or probability of increasing the population size in order to have an MPO? I've heard.
Well, yeah, the data for that information, the urbanized areas as defined by the Census Bureau, which is what Federal Highway Administration and the Surface Transportation Act defines the planning areas, that's to come out in March. And based on, I've been through 1980 census, 1990, 2000, and now 2010. And based on those trends, I do not expect our urbanized area to extend beyond the existing mass boundary. Right now, our mass boundary is larger than the urbanized area.
Paul, a quick, that wasn't a question, Paul. I understood that they were going to have a minimum population of 250,000 people in order to have an MPO.
Right now, there's at least three, maybe four separate Surface Transportation Acts going through Congress, through the Senate, through the House. And in fact, this afternoon, there's a telephone conference for the American Metropolitan Planning Organizations to discuss that. And then there was another email that came out yesterday asking us to comment on it. So right now, that's a big pot being stirred with the budget battle and everything else. And there's absolutely no way of knowing where that is.
My whole thought, Mr. Chairman, was that should a minimum population size to have an MPO come out of 250,000 people, we would lose, if I understand correctly, we would lose the current MPO. And my thought was whether or not we could investigate with Houston County, since they would lose theirs as well. You wouldn't have Nashville, you wouldn't have Rapids. And whether or not we could put the two together, and meet, minimum population criteria, so as to have one that would be shared between Bibb and Houston. That really was where my inquiry was going.
Okay, well, some of the proposals
grandfather in MPOs, at least for a period of time. So, again, it's a mixed bag out there, and by the time this gets done, who knows what will happen.
I think may agree that very question earlier you can ask. Was that not the question you raised on the previous one?
It's whether or not we should be looking at combining the two, because I continue to think that making one Robinson is going to grow closer together.
Yes.
And to have Houston County in a different NPO, would seem to be
challenging. Currently, if you would combine the urbanized area four mats and four rats, you would meet the minimum TMA area, which is 200,000. So,
right.
We would go over that. If that issue pops up in a past service transportation bill.
Well, regardless of whether the issue is forced on us by some minimum population size, it would just seem to me to be a wise idea to investigate combined Bibb and Houston so we can coordinate transportation plan rather than doing it in two different silos.
Yeah, that would be a 10-foot before. I should investigate that, but yeah, I mean, it should be.
It may address itself more to the policy committee than it does to the technical committee. Maybe we are just going to take go down and talk to the folks in the county.
Yeah, that was going to be my suggestion. The technical folks, we we're limited as to our negotiation and all of us to deal with those issues.
I think the best time we ought to do this, why don't we again make that effort? Because I think we did assign that responsibility. Now that's why I think we're back at this same point that we were before. So if that's something that this group wants, the policy group to take on,
I'll make that as a motion that the policy committee undertake an investigation to contact Houston County to explore the possibility of combining the two different MPOs into a single MPO that could do more regional planning.
Get a second on that.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Then move second discussion.
I mean, of course, we can approach it.
It may be a dead end from that end. I mean, it may very well be, but
they approach things the way we do. So.
But I thought too, go down there and talk to them. I mean, I know Tommy Sonny, and I know Mayor of Warren Rodney, Mayor Shaheen, and I know Mayor Fackloff and Paris, Mayor John Harley and Centerville, so I'll be glad to contact them and float that and bring a report back as to what they say, if you would like for me to do that.
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor, let it be known that I know that we will appoint a committee of we'll bring back a report.
I'm going to talk about the TIP amendment as far as Service Church Road Extension. You look on page number 5 of your agenda handout. This is the Sardis Church Road extension to Abbeville Mill Road. And this amendment involves the addition of funding for a preliminary engineering in the amount of $170,000 in FY 2012 for this particular project. And this is just kind of a minor amendment we have to bring up for kind of informational purposes. And we also have to be approved by the policy committee. And what this is, like I said, is just the addition of funding for a preliminary engineering in the year 2012 in the amount of $170,000.
We did not find out why the additional engineering money was needed. The original engineering estimate was done back in 2001 was for approximately $2 million, and this $170,000 is an 8.9% increase. Based on that, it's a TIP administrative adjustment. roadway project changes less than $5 million, and basically Matt and GDOT needs to communicate back and forth, make sure that the money's there, and it's an administrative change. And in discussing this with the GDOT staff, they would like to go ahead and get this done, so it's taken care of, and they can go ahead and do what they need to do up there to continue to work on the Sardis Church extension.
I move to approve the amendment.
I second the motion.
They move to second that to approve the amendment. Question?
I'm going to vote against strictly because CAC didn't get a chance to review it. I do think the fact that they're looking at bicycle facilities is a real positive issue.
Any other? All in favor, let me know. Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, motion is carried. I see Stan.
We have contacted in Clinton Ford, who is the person who works here locally. Headquarters is really up at the GDOT offices up in Atlanta. They have said that they will be trying to set up a public meeting on the sound barriers on the I-16, I-75 project. And as we still have not heard back from them, and we keep asking unless GDOT has heard anything further, we do not know when that meeting is going to be set up. The other issue that was brought up concerning that was the requesting additional sound barriers to extend beyond, and there is an email from Glenn Bowman in your handed out, and it basically says that there is no money to extend that, what they call the Type 2 program, beyond the existing project at this time. There is no money available for them to do that. So those are the two things on that. Those are basically the information items, I believe.
Any questions?
I would like to ask the policy committee to take action on the three recommendations made by the CAC. The fact that their current policy limits funding doesn't mean that should not be reviewed or maybe challenged if it's detrimental to the community. I think Mr. Ryan has demonstrated that under the federal regulations and past actions by GDOT and the Federal Highway Authority, that they have funded that type of project. I understand there's limitations in the state budget, but using that as an excuse to not address things that are detrimental to our community is something we need to push against.
Do you want to reiterate what those things were?
Yes, and I think it's, I appreciate the fact that the planning and zoning has had discussions with GDOT and they seem receptive, but I would still think the motion appropriate given the fact we don't have any action on that. Our first motion was that the policy committee request GDOT to study all areas adjoining I-75 and I-16 within the Macon city limits, including those outside the immediate project area, to determine whether sound barriers are warranted under federal requirements for the health and safety of Macon residents. You want me to read all these? And
I think it'll be accepted.
The second one is that the policy committee requests GDOT to expedite scheduling of the promised public meeting regarding sound barriers. And the third is that the policy committee requests that GDOT address all existing strategies for improving the aesthetics of current and future sound barriers, including the use of low-maintenance landscaping to screen the barriers.
Okay.
I so move.
I'm sorry. Move the second and accept the recommendation. Question?
Chairman, I think this really underscores, I think, the desire of the citizens to do it and bring to the table on these kinds of matters. And I personally think that it's a good thing.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other? All in favor, let me know by aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, our motion's carried.
Thank you.
Project status.
Good morning, you all. I've circulated our GDOT project list for projects within the MAS NPO. If you'd like to take a moment to review that, and I or my group would be happy to try to answer any questions you may have or get answers.
Maybe what we can do is come to listen to any particular questions you got about any particular thing.
You pull this from a website that you read to, right?
I mean, this is a matter of public record.
It is up on T-Rex?
T-Rex.
Okay, you're going to have to show me how to get to it so we can.
I will.
One of the questions that came up last time, and Jim told me to try to address this, is we need to be able to get to this and keep this status report better up. Put it up on our website and update it so the Mass Policy Committee can go to it and quickly take a look at it.
Sure.
That's been a concern. You know, I mean, we're not going to know why things were not done a lot of times, but at least we'll know where it is in the process.
Right.
Because you never find out why.
All this information is organized in this fashion for these NPO type meetings.
Yeah, well,
it's all out there. It's not
yeah, we'll have to take this because this is for planners and engineers and bureaucrats. That put it a little more friendly form for the citizens to take a look and see where it's at. So
sure.
Okay. We'll be able to do that. So you know, when we get together, we'll talk about that a little bit too.
Yes, sir.
On page one, project count two, Jeffersonville Road at Norfolk Southern, district comments. ADT, and annualized average daily traffic count, is in 2010 is 7,400. And in 2030 is apples and oranges, the 11,800. So I want y'all to help us understand better. What do you want to label it if it's not an ADT?
Those are design counts.
Design counts.
That's what I'm talking about, the precise ones.
So...
Those are not the ones you pull up the web.
Excuse me?
That's not the place where you pull up what you pull. Because you're just an architecture of capitalists. Precise design, all the ones that are done as part of the design.
So it should maybe have a different heading instead of an ADT. It's sort of like a DC, like a design count.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the little things that put in here. He is an engineer and planner, knows where the design counts and the public takes a look at it, and it doesn't. It's not, there's not an explanation, so that'd be the type of thing we would need to put in the status report so to clarify things like that. So that'll be a work in progress for a while. Make it easy for the mass and the public to get to and take a look at, because you go up on T-Rex and it's got a lot of information on there. You can circle around for a while.
Just put a legend so you know what they say.
That would make it useful.
Any other suggestions? What is ready to see? Okay, then. Thank you. Old business. New business.
I got one item. At the last policy meeting, there was a question raised about us helping with the transit authority to relocate to the maintenance facility. And that's something which we will be doing with the transit authority. We're going to do a relocation study for the maintenance facility.
Okay. If no other business, then can we so much bigger?
Don't move.
We said, I would say, let me know about it.